Is it ever right to censor a video on YouTube because some people are watching it and getting incited to violence? Is that a legitimate reason for censorship?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, what a weekend it has been. As things continue to boil in the Middle East and much of the Muslim world, so much controversy surrounding what's going on. But here on the Line of Fire, we are going to sort things out and do our best to have a biblical perspective. And we're going to have a debate. And I'm not necessarily going to be taking a position, but I want to hear your views. Now, here's the number to call. And don't call yet until you know what the debate's about. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884, or you could weigh in on my Facebook page, which is Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. But we're going to be talking about some of the causes of violence in the Muslim world, and then the question of censorship. Censorship. All right. I'm going to assume that you've been following what has happened in Libya and Egypt, and now, what, about 20 different locations around the world, including countries like Australia and Israel, where there have been Muslim protests, some of them peaceful, some of them violent to the point of deadly. Muslim protests ostensibly over this film that was made, originally we were told it was made by an Israeli-American. Turns out that was just a pseudonym that was being used for an Egyptian Coptic Christian living in America who had been arrested in the past and served jail time for con and fraud. And apparently the actors and actresses in the film didn't know that this was some Muhammad-mocking film, that the script was changed in certain ways or things were voiced over. There were one actress said that everything was filmed in front of a giant green screen, that they thought that it was going to be all types of high-tech special effects, and it ends up that the backdrop instead is that they're in the desert where Muhammad would have been conducting himself and beginning his mission. Anyway, there is excellent evidence that says the uprising in Libya with hundreds of people and sophisticated weaponry as well, was planned. Leaders of Libya said it was planned. Others said we gave you notice days in advance. The State Department still saying, no, it just happened spontaneously. And this was just because of this film. Muslims are upset over the film. The better evidence is that this was driven by Al-Qaeda and that it was also in response to the fact that our president has repeatedly talked about the fact he took out bin Laden. He took out bin Laden. America took out bin Laden. And this was planned retaliation to correspond with 9/11 when everything burst. Since then, however, in the Muslim world, a lot of the uprising, even though Al-Qaeda is behind a lot of it in the mind of the Muslims protesting. Again, this does not represent the entire Islamic world, but it is a representative faction among them. They have been protesting violently. It looks like it's going to go on for some time to come, and saying that America must get rid of this video. So here's the question. If you know that this video, which does not stand for American values or Christian values or any such thing, that this video is being used to incite violence and people are being killed in the Muslim world, and Americans have been killed, should YouTube, which is owned by Google now, should it censor the video? Was it right for the White House to ask Google to pull the video? Was it right for Google to block access to the video in Egypt and Libya alone? Or if you start censoring this, then where do you draw the line? Should the video be pulled? Should it be pulled in countries like Egypt and Libya where they don't have access to it? Or is this a matter of incorrect censorship? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH.
fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, yes or no, should these videos that are inciting violence, inciting Muslims to violence, be pulled from YouTube? Again, this is owned by Google, so these are private companies. Was it right for the White House to put pressure on Google to encourage Google to pull the videos? Is there something that crosses a line? What if the video said, this is how you kill people? Would that be pulled then? Or would it be pulled if it was bashing Jesus? No, if it was bashing Jesus, it'd be promoted. 866-34-TRUTH. Now, here's something fascinating. New York Times, October 2nd, 1999, in an editorial, defended the display of some so-called artwork by Andres Serrano and Chris Ofili, one called the Holy Virgin Mary, the other, the first one, too profane to even mention, mentions the name of the Lord and something in front of it. And these were profane, despicable pieces of work, supposedly art. And the New York Times defended the display and said, quote, a museum is obliged to challenge the public as well as to placate. A museum is obliged to challenge the public? Who says? Based on what definition of museum? A museum is obliged to challenge the public as well as to placate it, or else the museum becomes a chamber of attractive ghosts, an institution completely disconnected from art in our time. What an idiotic statement. Why can't it present beauty to the public? Or present educational things to the public? Who says it has to challenge it? Challenge it by profane, despicable defamations of Jesus and Mary? Well, they defended that. New York Times, September 12th this year, condemns the display of the innocence of Muslims. Whoever made the film did true damage to the interest of the United States and its core principle of respecting all faiths. So they're upset with this movie, but they were praising a museum that displayed despicable things that were, I haven't seen Innocence of the Muslim, just little bits, but I would say that these so-called pieces of art or artwork were far more defamatory, ugly, despicable than this movie. But either way, what about freedom of speech in America? What about First Amendment rights and on and on? 866 34-TRUTH. Going to go to the phones in one moment. Phone lines are lit up, so keep trying to get through. I want to get to as many of you as possible. And when I bring you on, I just want you to share your views as clearly as you can, all right? Because I want to hear from as many of you as possible. I just want you to get a perspective on what's going on from Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Meet the Press just yesterday.
Prime Minister, I want to understand very clearly what your views are. Is it your view that the Obama administration is either unwilling or unable to stop Iran from becoming a nuclear power?
Now, first of all, President Obama and the U.S. administration have repeatedly said that Israel has the right to act by itself against any threat to defend itself. And I think that that remains our position. And for me, the issue is, as the prime minister of a country that is threatened with annihilation by a regime that is racing, a brutal regime in Tehran that is racing to develop nuclear bombs for that end, obviously we cannot delegate the job of stopping Iran, if all else fails, to someone else. That was the main point that I was saying there. It was directed at the general international community. A lot of leaders call me, tell me, don't do it, it's not necessary. You know, the danger of acting is much greater than not acting, and I always say the danger of not acting in time is much greater because Iran with nuclear weapons would mean that the kind of fanaticism that you see storming your embassies would have a nuclear weapon. Don't let these fanatics have nuclear weapons.
Prime Minister,
right, so that's really the issue, that you do have fanatics among the Muslims, whether that represents 2% or 10% or 20%, that's a separate debate. But you do have radical Islam. You do have often a Middle Eastern mentality that may be more prone to some type of uprising like this. You have the radical leadership of Iran. Should you cater to people who are radical and fanatical? Or, hey, it could save lives. And don't you want to send a message from America that we recognize and repudiate the idiocy and the wrongness of the Innocence of the Muslims movie, even if there are any true critiques about Muhammad? The way it's done is a mockery and certainly not in the interest of reaching Muslims. On the flip side, okay, you're going to pull that. What if Christians get upset somewhere else, so-called Christians, and start killing people because they're upset with a Jesus movie? And then what if some other group gets upset and starts killing people because they're upset with some quotation of Scripture? I mean, where does one draw the line? 866-34-TRUTH. We'll start with Allison in Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi there. Actually, I was just going to say what you said. You have these people where if the Christians were upset about something and they start killing people because someone made a movie that said Jesus was a bad person, you don't see that in today's society. So are you going to accommodate people that are doing something that is just outright awful and agree with these people? Let it keep catapulting and domino into something else? So where are you going to draw the line?
Would you say that it's similar to a parent not giving in to a child having a tantrum? I'm not saying these Muslims are children, but would you say it's the similar kind of thing that you just can't capitulate to that type of mentality?
Absolutely. And to me, it's kind of like negotiating with terrorists. I mean, we're not going to do it. So Are you all of a sudden going to accommodate somebody and say, okay, well, maybe we'll negotiate with these people because we want to save a life? Which, like you said, in a perfect world, that would work. But it's not going to work. If Obama continues to be a weak leader and to lower the bar and live in a perfect world, it's just going to make things more dangerous for us in everyday life. It's just going to make it worse.
All right, got it. Allison, thank you for weighing in. Clearly, friends, feel free to agree with Allison or disagree or have an entirely other perspective. If you're a Muslim listening, I'd love to hear from you as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Tim in Glenwood, Maryland, what's your take on this?
Yes, Dr. Brown, I just wanted to say it strikes me as kind of hypocritical. The individual who made this film and was interviewed over the weekend, or not interviewed, more like interrogated, as to whether or not there should be charges brought against them, they were released back into, non-custody, back to their life. And yet they've retreated into, a form of hibernation where they are insulated from any kind of attack against themselves. But they have created this insightful situation around the world where innocent Americans and innocent people who are Christians are being killed or, beaten or, pummeled because of the fact of what this one individual has done or what this one person
has done.
All right,
so Tim, should the video be pulled? In other words, if he's irresponsible in putting it out, and I don't think he was being investigated for the video, but for other issues, potential parole violations or things like that. Right, but do you think then that the video should be pulled, that it was irresponsible to put it out, lives are being at risk, why should we allow it to happen? What's your take then?
Well, yes, I do. I believe in free speech, but when free speech becomes causing others to insightfully, create havoc in the world and to, kill or maim or, in the name of another religion, take, many liberties, to stomp out what they regard as, the view of all Americans, then I think that's
right.
The point where things must be intervened on.
Got it. Oh, okay. Thanks, Tim. Thank you. Joey, do we have clip number four ready? This was at the Values Voters Summit, largely Christian gathering, just took place, and there was a gay protest. Let's take a listen to that.
Help somebody!
Did you hear that? Here's a gay protest saying that this values voters meeting, largely Christians, your values are killing us. I'll tell you why I played that when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just want to remind you that Wednesday this week we have planned another debate from 2 to 3 in the afternoon Eastern Standard Time. Professor Doug Grodice from Denver Theological Seminary wants to present his views on why Christians should vote for Mitt Romney, and I want all of you who differ with him, be it because he's a Mormon or for other reasons, I want you to be ready to call. Again, this is not a show that we are putting forward while we're endorsing a certain candidate. We're not. Rather, I want to have a discussion because many disagree with Professor Grodice's position, and I want to give you an opportunity to discuss it with someone who's a clear-headed Christian thinker. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Towards the end of this show, I'll share some thoughts I have towards the end of this hour, some short thoughts that I have in terms of pulling the video, this Innocence of the Muslims video, whether she be pulled or not. But I just played this other clip with, I don't know, a half dozen gay protesters that showed up at the Values Voters Summit, which reflect a lot of conservative Christian voters. And they were shouting out, "Your values are killing us. Your values are killing us." Well, do you step back from your position just because someone claims that what you hold to is killing them or leading to deaths in the gay and lesbian community? Now, I'm simply stating that to say, where does one draw the line? In other words, there are things I'm talking about on the radio today that are doubtless offensive to some. Does that get censored? You say, well, that's different than the Innocence of the Muslims video and infinitely different than people saying, hey, we stand for biblical values, and then gays saying, you're killing us with your values. But where does one draw the line? I'm just asking questions on the heels of the last caller. Again, I want to hear from you on this. Diane in Houston, what's your take?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I think that because of the horrible damage this has caused and us knowing we cannot rationalize with what is going on with these people, that I feel like the video should be pulled under the ruse of a hate crime, perhaps. But I do believe, I know our freedom of speech is very, very important, but I do believe that this has gone too far. And that's just how I feel.
Got it. All right. Thank you for weighing in. I appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. Anil in Greenbelt, Maryland, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you, Dr. Brown. Everyone knows that freedom of expression, freedom of speech, even freedom of religion is not absolute. We tend to get confused when we see, you know, a difference between class. There is a global class, middle class, or westernized class you could talk of, versus, you know, the working classes, the uneducated. Where I'm going with this argument is that lawyers, doctors would not be doing the things in the Muslim world that we saw last week. It's we can solve the problem by putting pressure on these governments to really address the poverty and unemployment. And once we create middle-class people, we'll have middle-class values. I say that also knowing that ultimately the city of God and the city of man are two different standards. we should not put all our eggs in this basket right here on earth. Our citizenship is in heaven. We
right.
tend to idolize the American flag. So what if someone burns a flag? I mean, they burn flags of all kinds. We should not take that too personally because, you know, after all, even Romney doesn't have total freedom to express his opinion. A lot of time he has the freedom to agree with Obama, especially when it comes to foreign policy.
All right, hey, I'm just going to jump in to get to some other callers, but thank you for your perspective. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Anjali in Manassas, Virginia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I do not believe that this film should be pulled. We need to draw the line somewhere. Once you start doing that, it's a matter of time before all of our freedoms will be infringed upon because someone gets mad or angry. I do believe that they should bring our American citizens home. And if those people want to burn and loot and kill and do all that stuff, if they want to because of some ignorance, then that's up to them. But if they start that in this country, we need to take action. This is this film has nothing to do with the uprising that took place over there. It all had to do with the killing of bin Laden in 9/11 because our country, the State Department, wanted to cover it up. They came out and announced this film, and then you had opportunist groups that came out and wanted to kill and start looting. We need to get down to the bottom of the basics and get down to truth here. Now, we need to stop placating to the enemy, and because we have a weak president who's weak on foreign policy when it comes to Islam and radical Islam is the reason why we're facing all this. Those people admire strength, but they will not cross the line if we show strength. Now, I don't think we should usurp our freedom whatsoever because of a temper tantrum.
All right, Anjali, very clearly said, thank you so much for weighing in with such clarity and passion. I appreciate it. 866-348-7884. Hey, just a reminder to our friends listening on WAVA-FM, you get the first half hour of our show, but the full first hour is broadcast from 5 to 6 on WAVA-AM. All right, I want you to hear some music. We're going to get back with all your calls, so stay there. I want you to hear some wonderful music from Israel, and I'll tell you who it is in a moment. All right, this is an amazing CD straight from Israel by Mark Chapinsky. Mark was a guitar player, one of the vocalists and songwriters with the famous messianic praise group Israel's Hope, led by Paul Wilbur and with Rene Bloch. He has now produced from Israel his first ever solo CD. It's called Israel's Hope. It's wonderful. Messianic praise and worship, and we're probably the first to announce it here in the States. I want to encourage you to get this. You will be truly, truly blessed. It is now a sacred season in the Jewish holy days as well. We put together a great package to save you some money also, a 12-hour teaching series that I did on Stand with Israel, which includes a classic two-hour debate with a counter-missionary rabbi who's refused to deal with me for 20 years now since this debate. You can get this all. It's eight different messages on one CD to listen to on your computer or your MP3 player, and with it, the CD, Israel's Hope by Mark Chapinsky. You just heard one clip from one of the songs. $25 postage paid for both, so it's a great deal. Call today, order multiple copies if you like, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the online bookstore for the special offer, or call 1-800-278-9978. The debate will continue.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on the line of fire. My dear bride of 36-plus years sent me a note yesterday about these the debate over the video. Should the Innocence of the Muslims video be pulled? Google decided to, which owns YouTube, decided to block access to it in Egypt and Libya, where the controversies were swirling and where lives continually were being at risk. Of course, it's spiraling out to many, many other nations, even though I agree this was not the first cause of the riots in Libya. By any means, this is now the ostensible cause for the ongoing riots. Is it right to censor at all? There's talk that it broke laws in terms of content for India and Indonesia, perhaps some of the what some are calling pornographic content of the video. So it broke laws there. It's being blocked there. Should it be blocked? Should it be censored? Should it be pulled? Nancy sent me the link, said this would be a good topic for radio. I said, you bet. 866-34-TRUTH. James in Fairfax, Virginia, what's your take on this?
Yes, hello. Am I on?
Yes, you are on the air. Everyone's listening with rapt attention, James.
Wonderful. I'm a student of conflict analysis and resolution at George Mason University.
Uh-huh.
I'm also a father of Jesus, and I have many Muslim friends, many of which are born patriots here in the United States, who work for civil service government jobs, and also people who have come over fleeing persecution from those lands. And I just want to go through a few points that I think a lot of listeners are avidly missing. Number one, I would ask, you know, for people calling in, how many people actually know a Muslim very closely or have friends who are Muslim who have been through things like this? The video itself, the reason why there are riots and protesting is not... The video is a surface cause. Underlying conditions in those countries are unemployment, poverty, lack of upward mobility, things like that. So a lot of people, what they're looking at is, what they think they're looking at on the surface level is actually a lot of underlying conditions and a lot of stress within the countries, with especially youth who are fed up with their own governments, who are basically using this as a venting mechanism. And the governments, it's great for the governments because they don't have to worry about, right now at least, they don't have to worry about the underlying conditions in their country. They're using it as a scapegoat. But I would really like to stress the fact that Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And regardless of what people are doing, I think it's a responsibility of the Christian faith to reach over and build bridges, and to also not forget the historical things that have been done within those regions,
right,
with the Crusades and colonialization. There is still very much a taste, even in people that are born today, that taste is in the mouth of citizens within the Middle East.
All right, so James, just real quick to jump in here. I appreciate you bringing those perspectives, especially when we can caricature all Muslims into the ones that are rioting. And we also have to remember that in the Muslim world, the main victims of radical Islam are other Muslims. They're the
Absolutely.
Ones being oppressed and suppressed and killed and so on, like the women in Afghanistan who can't get education where the Taliban rule. But just in short, because we've got a few seconds and a break and I've got to get to other calls, what comes first, our concern not to set a bad example to moderate Muslims or our freedoms of speech? Do we pull the video or not?
Well, I'll answer it very quickly. Paul says, if anything offends your brother, if they're weak in faith, don't do it. And I think that free speech goes to the extent of addressing a grievance. It doesn't go to basically rudely and disrespectfully and abhorrently trash on someone and demonize them. So I think the video should be pulled. And
okay, got it. Yeah, sorry to cut you off, James, but we're out of time. So you think that across the board that free speech should have certain Christian limitations based on civility? All right, what do you do when America's not all Christian? Get your call. Stay with us.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. If you can't get through on the phone, you can always add your comments to our website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Should the Innocence of the Muslims YouTube video be pulled? Should it be pulled in Muslim parts of the world? Should it be pulled here in America? What about our freedom of speech? What about our First Amendment rights? What comes first? Mike in the Bronx. Thanks. All right, we lost Mike in the Bronx. Let's go to another Mike. We lost Mike in Edison, New Jersey. Come on. This is Mike Brown. All the mics, stand strong. We got one line open, 866-34-TRUTH. Mark in Alexandria, Virginia. We lost Mark in Alexandria, Virginia. Wow. John in Houston, Texas. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
I absolutely believe that we, should never be forced to pull this video. In my opinion, this gives victory to the murderers and that desecrate the freedoms for which those SEALs and our ambassadors believe in. I think we believe in that God gave us our freedoms, and if we acquiesce on these freedoms of speech and give to the Muslim murderers that I don't believe for one moment killed solely over the video, by the way.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
How many other freedoms will we have to hand over to them? I mean, when they extort us with violence, Americans believe that God gave us our freedoms. But I think that the Muslim instigators that despise Christianity and, by the way, behead professors of our faith in their own countries, I believe they deny us professing Jesus as Lord, and therefore our freedom of religion would be also the next to go down the pike. We should never, ever surrender to the demands of people that blatantly murder our fellow Americans like they did, especially in this despicable manner, and then propagate it and make videos of this, I understand. This is extortion, and Americans have stood in the face of extortion for 200 years. We should not cave in now.
Got loud and clear, John. Thank you, sir, for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. I so appreciate hearing many different perspectives, and it helps us to think things through when you hear the arguments on both sides. I just want to put out a question for you. I want to put out this question for you. If you've been trying to get through, we've got a couple open lines now, but they are going just about instantly. Just letting you know, now's a good time to try to get through and get on the line here. Okay, I just want to raise this issue. I agree that there are many peace-loving Muslims in America and in the world. I agree that we can have a false caricature, an exaggerated caricature of Islam, as if all Muslims want to go around beheading people, etc. And there are Muslims who are fighting for reform within their nations, but let's just say they're doing it at the risk of their own lives. The question is, do we want to say to the Islamic world, we find this video terribly offensive, yet it is one of our values in America that we have freedom. Because we have Judeo-Christian foundations, we have certain freedoms of speech and conscience. And in America, you can be a Christian leader and convert to Islam, and you're not going to be killed for it. And you can be an Islamic leader and convert to Christianity, and you're not going to be killed for it. And you can be an atheist and get up and mock the scriptures, and we won't throw you in jail. Do we want to say to the Islamic world, we are not happy with the fact that our troops in Saudi Arabia do not have true freedom of religion while there? We're not happy with the fact that in other Islamic countries that are radically Islamic, that there can be severe penalties for conversion, and that it is illegal for a Muslim to become a Christian in many of these countries. Do we want to raise these issues as say, look, we think this video is horrible, and we regret that it has many of you upset, but this is one of our values, or is Is that foolishness to even try to raise those points? All right, Michael in the Bronx, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Go ahead. Thank you. Yes.
In my opinion, the video should never have been released on social media whatsoever. It extremely troubles me that no one took responsibility for putting down the idea of putting it on social media in light of the fact that it incited all this violence and killing around the world.
All right, so
freedom of speech is one of our most cherished rights as Americans, and it has been used and abused to the extreme reaches of the reason why we were given this right. It was never meant to incite violence, and it was never meant to incite this kind of...
All right. Well, I appreciate that. My questions, of course, would be who then decides on YouTube what goes on, what doesn't? Look, Facebook pulled a page of mine that was devoted to my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, because some gay and straight allies of gay folks on Facebook protested it and claimed it was hate speech. Just a page devoted to my book, which doesn't have a word of hate speech, except when I quote people engaging in true hate speech and say this is wrong. That got pulled. Well, you know, what if someone says, well, the Bible is causing gay kids to commit suicide? I mean, where does one draw the line is the question. And then again, the fact that some fanatics are using this as an excuse to kill or to riot, does that mean that the film itself cannot be posted? Oh, I agree. We have all kinds of abuses of free speech, but we do have a law that says you can't draw the line unless it tangibly does incite violence. That would be a fair question. Does it actually incite violence, or is it a fanatical response that causes the violence? Reverend Bruce on Long Island, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
Say that again?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Okay. Lashana Tova to you.
Thank you. A good new year to you and the Lord as well.
I believe that free speech should be protected at all costs, but this is what a lawyer, an attorney said. I don't know. I guess you would know Gordon Ross from the 700 Club. He's an attorney. He says that when it comes to private companies, like Facebook is considered private, and I believe YouTube is considered private, they do have a right to censor because they're private companies. But when it comes to governmental, that is where the freedom of speech is. Now, that was what he had said. But the general rule is that the very right we have to come on this radio program and express our opinion, that if our freedom of speech is taken from us, we could be arrested just by coming against the government or coming against certain aspects of what the government wants to prevail in our country. And if we start to censor every little thing that is said that makes someone angry, you got to take the good with the bad. There is nothing perfect. Yes, the freedoms could be used and twisted for evil, but it also is used for good. And if we got to take the good with the bad, and that's pretty much my bottom line.
Yep, I appreciate it. And again, I'm not saying where I agree or don't agree yet. Let's just say I appreciate those comments very much. George in Orange, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
I don't think it should be censored. I don't think we should give up our freedom of speech, and I don't. Who's going to decide? Like you say, who decides when you draw the line? I agree with the prior call when he said the next one will be as our freedom of religion will go. No, it shouldn't be done that. It's, I think it's a fanatical response to cause of violence. The Islamic people can talk about killing the Jews, cutting their head off, annihilating them from the face of the earth, and that's all right. But somebody says something about Islam, oh, it's a terrible thing. No, I don't think it should be censored.
Yep, George, loud and clear. Phone just cut out at the end, but loud and clear. Yeah, look, think of this for a second. The Iranian leaders have said they want to completely annihilate Israel, wipe it out. It's a cancer in the world. Want to wipe out the Jews in Israel. Is that not 10,000 times more inflammatory than an idiotic video that idiotically insults Islam put out by some unknown film producer who's not even a native-born American?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I'm taking my last two calls on this video debate. I so appreciate the different perspectives that have been raised. If you missed any of the broadcast, just go to askdrbrown.org and click on The Line of Fire, and you can catch the entire show. Sandra in Bohemia on Long Island. We lost Sandra in Bohemia. Jeff in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to make a couple of quick points. We should be able to identify the rhetoric here. For one, I've seen countless shows where they ridicule the deity of Christ, and I don't see anybody going out and acting crazy on that. I just don't watch that show anymore. And the last two go hand in hand is, for one, I'm sure this isn't the first thing that's been put out that criticizes Islam, and that just goes to show that really this uprising has nothing to do with this video, which came out in June, and his uprising started on 9/11.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to get your take on that as to whether it even had anything to do with the video.
Yeah,
Not to mention the fact that we shouldn't even take it down.
Right. It's being used as the pretense now. And as I'm sure as it spreads to other parts of the Muslim world, these things kind of take on a life of their own. But yes, I agree. According to all the evidence that we have, the initial riots in Libya were planned out well in advance. The president of Libya is saying that plainly, and others are saying we knew it, and warning was given to the U.S. embassy. There are other security indications that was the case, and the pretense was, the real cause from what we can see, was it was the anniversary of 9/11. Our president, in his campaigns, has spoken much about taking down Osama bin Laden. I'm not saying that he shouldn't. I'm simply saying that he did. You don't think that's going to produce a response from Al-Qaeda, that you killed their leader and they would look at it as you killed him in cold blood and then dumped his body in the ocean, and you're boasting about this as one of your great exploits? Of course that's going to get a response. Others have also argued that we took out an Al-Qaeda leader in Afghanistan of Libyan descent, so Libyan man, that was killed by a drone earlier this year, and this was further retaliation for it. It was a fairly recent event. And then the movie becomes the pretense, and then once you hear about this in the Muslim world, now it's America has put out this anti-Muslim video, and then the thing spreads. But it's absolutely a pretense. Thanks, Jeff. And as an earlier caller said, there are lots of other conditions in these countries. You often have poverty. You have a lot of young people, sometimes a disproportionate number of young people, which tends to especially young men, leads to more violence. There's upheaval in the Muslim world, and there's a lot of anti-American sentiment. Remember, if we go in and bomb Afghanistan or we go in and bomb Iraq, there are some who are grateful that we're doing it, many who are in those countries and in parts of the Muslim world, others who look at it as just America and our overreach, and what are we doing bombing? I'm not supporting that view. I'm simply saying that that's a perception in the Muslim world. So it doesn't take much to create hostility, especially when you've got so many Muslims. All you need is a few million fanatics among them, or radicals among them, As we've said before, if you've got more than 1.6 billion Muslims in the world, if only one-tenth of them were supportive of radical Islam, that's 160 million people. If 20% were supportive, that's well over 300 million people. So you don't need a majority by any means to have this type of hostility. And then when America is perceived as an ally of Israel, as much as we've been critical of the present administration for not being a stronger friend of Israel, in point of fact, we are perceived around the world to be a friend of Israel, supportive of Israel, putting a rubber stamp on Israeli policies, and thereby standing against the Palestinians. That would be the perception in much of the Muslim world. And then there's the fact that we're considered to be Christian, and yet we export pornography and all these worldly shows around the world, and that's considered to be Christianity. So there's a lot of hostility. So on the one hand, for the gospel's sake, we reach out, we do whatever we can to avoid stumbling blocks. But as far as just an American policy, of course we can't pull a video. And of course we shouldn't, because of freedoms of speech. Now, if there are other reasons to pull it or not have it on a social media site like YouTube, sexual content or something else, that's another story entirely. Now, should it be pulled in a country like Egypt or Libya? I don't have a problem with that, only because this is not a country that shares our values about freedoms of speech. But that's separate to me than the question of pulling it. No, it shouldn't be. I respect the different viewpoints. I think everyone that weighed in had a good point to make. There was not a single call that didn't have good points to make. But my own view is, no, we don't pull the video. All right. Take a listen to some music that will thrill some of your souls as you hear it. Go ahead, Joey. All right, what a great song to be singing on this time of year, which on the Jewish calendar is Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, the biblical calendar, Yom Teruah, the sounding of the shofar, blowing of the trumpet. It's my friend and colleague Mark Chapinsky, who's lived with his wife and family in Israel for years now and was part of the famous, the world-famous Messianic praise and worship group Israel's Hope, led by Paul Wilbur with Mark Chapinsky and Renee Bloch. Renee played woodwinds so masterfully. Mark now has finally put out, at long last, a solo CD. 14 songs. The second one, the one we just played a clip from, All Israel Shall Be Saved. I'm holding it in my hands. When Mark sent it to me, I said, all right, we've got to get this out to our radio listeners. It's 14 songs, Messianic praise and worship, on a brand new CD called Israel's Hope by Mark Chapinsky. Produced, recorded entirely in Israel, all the songs written by Mark. And here's how you can get it. $25 postage paid. We have a special package that saves you $10 or $15. The CD from Mark, plus my MP3 teaching series, Stand With Israel, including a debate with counter-missionary Rabbi Tovia Singer. He hasn't debated me since. That's 20 years back. The audio debate of that, outreach lectures, messages on Israel, to listen to on your computer or your MP3 player, and then the CD to listen to on your CD player or your computer. Call right now to order, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our online bookstore, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Take advantage of this special offer. You will be singing these tunes, playing them around your house as you drive, celebrating together with us. My bottom line today, we cannot capitulate to terrorism. We cannot capitulate to fanaticism. While we recognize some things are offensive and we renounce them as such, we do not lose our freedoms over them. What in the world has happened to moral absolutes? Have we just lost the fear of God and consciousness of God, and now it's trickled down to the entire society?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I want to lay some things out today that are very important and very fundamental, and I think will help jar us into spiritual reality. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Here's the number to call to join me in the discussion, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, or you can go to my website, askdrbrown.org. You can click on The Line of Fire and weigh in with your comments there. I'm talking about moral absolutes. I'm talking about fundamental spiritual truths, absolutes about God and about what is right and wrong. And when we depart from those, when we move away from those, anything goes. And we're watching it happen in our society today on a shocking level. Let me explain. I've written about this. I've talked about it, the slippery slope of morality, that you open the door to one thing and it opens the door to other things. And it's not just because of the progression of sin. I've written that sin doesn't satisfy. Instead, sin leads to more sins, and then sin leads to worse sins, and then sin enslaves, or as someone else has put it, sin takes you further than you plan to go, costs you more than you plan to pay, keeps you longer than you planned to stay. Well, that happens with human beings. We open the door to this, well, we get used to it, it's not so bad. And we open the door to something else, we get used to it, it's not so bad, doesn't really excite anymore. And that opens the door to something else. Then we end up hanging out with people and doing things we never would have done. I understand that progression. But there's something else to the slippery slope, which is this. Once we abandon moral absolutes, once we abandon the authority of God, once we abandon the truth of Scripture, once we abandon the fact that there will be a resurrection and people will be judged, and there is such a thing as righteousness and wickedness in God's sight, and God does not have to ask for the right to be the judge, or ask if we would be kind enough to allow him to be involved in our lives. He is the king. He is the Lord. He is the judge. Once we get away from those truths in the church, among believers, in our own lives, once society as a whole casts out the idea of an absolute God and absolute morals, then ultimately anything goes. And the question is, why not? Why not? If one thing is wrong and unspeakable and then it gets embraced, why not something else that's more wrong and more unspeakable? I read a quote from New Testament scholar N.T. Wright, who said that just a generation ago, adultery was viewed the way incest would be viewed today. And of course, that's changing in certain circles. There's a quote from the 1950s from a Harvard professor who was from Russia, a sociologist, who said that in some of our colleges, we have professors teaching who are divorced. I think that's what he was concerned about in the 1950s. The point I'm making is this. And some of you are victims of divorce and are seeking to rebuild your life. By no means am I heaping condemnation on you. I'm always sensitive to say that. But please hear me. We, even often in the church today, have lost sight of moral absolutes and an absolute God who has an absolute right to judge. I'll expand more on that when we come back and put some questions out for you today, right here on The Line of Fire.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. All right, 866-348-7884. By God's grace, we are serving as your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity 5 days a week, 2 hours a day across the nation. And many of you listening get the second hour, so you're getting me 1 hour a day. But we do our best to get us to think biblically in the midst of societal confusion, in the midst of often confusion in the church. We say a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos, and a church all too often in compromise. Slippery slope, the loss of moral values, the loss of moral perspective, the loss of something being clearly right or clearly wrong. It is infecting our society at epidemic level. It has been going on and deepening for many years now. Here's my question for you. Do you think, because so much of the mentality of the society has become godless, or godless to the extent that it denies absolute authority to God, believing in some type of God of its own imagination if it doesn't entirely deny God, do you think that we end up apologizing for our values? Look, I have no desire to prove my orthodoxy by thumping a 4-pound Bible in public. And if I don't thump that Bible, then I'm not an orthodox believer. I'm not trying to put on some show. I'm an unashamed witness of Jesus. I unashamedly hold to the absolute authority of Scripture. I unashamedly quote God's word and declare it. And yes, I'm not interested in giving you my opinions on a million different subjects, but rather saying, well, here's what God's word says. But do you feel that we, even as believers, get infected with that attitude, that, as if God doesn't have the right to do what he does? And it infuses some of our preaching and teaching where we have to make God acceptable to people. Do you notice that we do that? That we water things down so that God is now, okay, I can accept a God like that. Okay, he doesn't offend me. The question is not if God offends us. The question is not if God is acceptable to us. The question is not, Do we like him the way he is, or do we need to change him to make him acceptable? No, the question is, are we offending him? The question is, are we acceptable to him? We've got this thing so turned upside down and confused, friends, that we've lost sight of the difference between right and wrong, and we are progressively getting into a situation where, hey, if I feel good about it, if it seems to satisfy me, if, you know, as a believer, we say, I have grace for that, well, then it's okay, as opposed to, what does God say? What does God say? 866-348-7884. Many gay activists have argued that there is no slippery slope, that there is no connection between the argument for same-sex so-called marriage and, say, polygamy or polyamory. Polygamy, by the way, would be a man married to multiple women. Polyamory would be men and women living together in loving partnership, whether it's two men and two women, whether it's three men and one woman, whether it's two, whatever the agreement is, that's what they do, and they raise their kids together. And according to Newsweek a few years ago, there are at least 500,000 families like that, 500,000 families like that in America. Gay activists say there's no connection between opening the door to redefining marriage to say it can be two men or two women, no connection between that and polygamy or polyamory or incest or pedophilia or things like that. Now, I understand there are some differences. If you talk about an adult abusing a child, there's a difference. But if you talk about two consensual adults or three or four or five doing what they want to do, if the government should sanction one of those relationships, if it's two men or two women, why shouldn't it sanction or recognize the others? Why shouldn't there be, quote, equality for all? Once you get away from saying there is an absolute right and wrong, once you get away from saying, no, this is what marriage should be, and from a believing viewpoint, this is why God made it like this, then how are you gonna stop it from going even further? The fact is you can't. But I want to say this again. I've asked the question, but let me say, in my view, we've turned things upside down in many cases where we are seeking in our churches to preach a God who is acceptable to us. Preach a version of grace that is acceptable to us. Preach a version of judgment that is acceptable to us. Look, I've been meditating on some of the verses about the final resurrection, that everyone will stand before God and be judged. Right now, the Jewish calendar is Rosh Hashanah. The biblical day is Yom Truah, the day of the sounding of the trumpet blast, Yom Truah. And it is a wake-up call. It is a time of repentance in the nation, and it ultimately will point to the Messiah's return with the blast of a trumpet. And a religious Jew does not question, he or she does not question that God has the right to judge. Religious Jew recognizes that God is absolute, that God created all things, that we are created for him, and the people of Israel, from a Jewish perspective, called uniquely to follow his Torah, his laws and his commandments, and therefore we must give account to him, and unapologetically so, that he will judge us. We don't stand in judgment of him. We're not going to appear before the judgment seat, say, I got a gripe with you, God. You know, I don't like the way you know, my kids didn't do well and, you know, lost this relative in a car wreck and you know, a lot of suffering. I don't like the way you run your... That's not going to happen. We're not going to be accusing God on that day. He is going to be holding us accountable. There will be a final resurrection, and people will stand before the judgment seat of God. I remember when I was in college, some days I would really be in faith and pray when I was going to Queens College. I drive in from Long Island into Queens, and it was really hard to park anywhere near the school. But some days I'd just be in faith. I'd pray, and I'd boom, there it was, spot half a block away. And I'd pull right in there. Other days I'm praying full of faith, parking space going to open up, and nothing, and driving here, driving there, and, you know, blocks and blocks away. Maybe it's snowy and cold. I don't want to have to walk that far. And one time I parked, more than once I would say, I parked hoping I would be okay, only to get a ticket. Like, nah, I was too close to this corner here, or this wasn't right. But one time I parked, and I didn't realize what had happened. I honestly didn't know that I was in violation for anything. And it turned out that with a change of address, I had a license that was expired on the records for the old address, and I finally get this thing forwarded to me saying my license has been suspended. What? Didn't pay this ticket, and then, well, I never got a ticket. So I try to find out, piece together what happened. Apparently I'd gotten a ticket, and somebody must have just pulled it off my car. I didn't know I'd gotten a ticket. And then something with address change, whatever. So I have to go into the court. And as I'm sitting there, it was in the days of, you didn't have full computer systems, but they did have access to past records and things like that. And you know, some access to data that was in some type of, you know, computer base. And I remember, you know, one guy gets up there and he says, Judge, I asked for leniency. I was arrested for driving while intoxicated. But, you know, my very first violation, I'm a responsible man. I would never let this happen. And the judge is just about to be lenient. His assistant, she's going through the record. She said, sir, this is his 12th violation. All right, license suspended. You don't drive for a year, whatever it was. Like, ooh. Then another guy gets up and he says, yeah, I'm in here for my wife. It is true that she went through a red light, but here's what happened. There was a problem with the brakes. There was a problem with the brakes in our car, and I was about to get them fixed. You know, my wife went out, and she tried to stop, and couldn't stop, and that's why she ran through the red light. And I thought, well, that's valid. That's valid. It wasn't her fault. And the judge says, you let your wife go out in the car where the brakes were no good? Whew, he gets nailed. So I'm starting to think, okay, I'm not going to make a long story here. You know, I tell him honestly, I mean, I didn't know about the ticket, but just, hey, here's my situation. What do I do? And I'm sitting next to a guy, and everybody's going before us. There's just a few of us left. And I thought, hey, I better share the gospel with this guy I'm sitting next to. And I said, you know, sometimes we say, hey, I'm a pretty good person. But, you know, one day we're going to stand before God. not this earthy judge, but we're going to stand before God. And this guy, turns out he was a believer, he said to me, and his records are a lot more detailed than the records they have here. And I said, only the blood of Jesus can save us. And he said, that's right. But friends, there are moral absolutes, and we need to tell the world what's right and wrong. I don't mean on a political level primarily. I mean on a gospel preaching level, and we need to live it out. Pastors, leaders, I want to encourage you not to be ashamed of the truth of Scripture, and not to speak in a way where we're apologizing for what is right. It's the truth that sets people free, and if a day of judgment is coming, it behooves us to warn and to speak the truth and to show the way of mercy and forgiveness.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to have this opportunity to be with you. First hour, we had a lively debate, our callers calling in to discuss whether the Innocence of the Muslims video movie that's on YouTube, whether it should be pulled because it's leading to loss of life because of Muslim riots. My ultimate conclusion there was no, there are freedoms of speech that we have here in America, and we don't capitulate those even for an idiotic video. By the way, it was allegedly put out by an Israeli-American filmmaker. That was just a false name, false information. It was put out by an Egyptian man, a Coptic Christian living in America who had previously been convicted of various frauds and cons and spent time in jail over that. Unless it violated some rules of pornography or things like that, whereby it should not be on social media or other things. In point of fact, we have these freedoms, and we need to tell the Muslim world, we abhor this video, we think it's idiotic and wrong and offensive, and we're sorry it offends them. Nonetheless, we have freedoms here in our country, and we don't go around killing people and beheading people when they differ. Just think of what would happen with all the anti-Christian stuff that's out there. It's vulgar, it's ugly, it's wrong. But unless the moral standards in our nation change, where there's just not an interest in it, and people can't afford to put the trash out, it's just part of our freedoms. Question is, how far do they go? What is acceptable? We do have certain censorship in terms of profanity on the airwaves. We have certain censorship in terms of nudity and sexual scenes, and certain limits. I don't know where the line's drawn with this, but certain limits with violence. However, we do have limits in place, and then we do have freedoms. Another discussion entirely, but you can catch that online later at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. So my question to you, have we lost sight of moral absolutes, not just in society, but in the church? Have we found it necessary to preach a God who is acceptable to our version of what is right and wrong, lest he seem like some fanatical God of maybe some fanatical Muslims? Are we ashamed of the God of the Old Testament? Have we bought into the narrative that the Old Testament God is some kind of monster, some genocidal, megalomaniac monster? To use some of the terms that Richard Dawkins famously did in his God Delusion book, do we feel that we have to make God palatable to 21st century America? Now look, you know I do apologetics. You know I'm engaged in answering Jewish objections to Jesus. You know that I'm engaged in dealing, say, with agnostics and atheists. I'm engaged with people who do not share my moral values. I'm engaged with the homosexual community and issues having to do with gay activism. I have absolutely no problem with seeking to take a biblical truth and explaining it in a way that would help a 21st century American understand it and grasp it, but I'm not going to water down certain absolute truths. God is God without apology. Now, many of you know my testimony from LSD to PhD. Before I was saved, I was really lost. I plunged headlong into drug use and drinking and an ungodly, proud, sinful lifestyle. And I remember going to the synagogue. It was this time of the year. It was the High Holy Days. That was the only time of the year I would go. Sometimes my father would go for a Sabbath service, a Shabbat service on Saturday morning. Sometimes he'd go several straight weeks or maybe even a few months. Sometimes he'd go last minute. He'd get a phone call. They didn't have the 10 men necessary for what's called a minyan. Minyan just means number, but it stands for 10 people. In traditional Judaism, you need to have 10 men for an official prayer service. And he'd get a call last minute, Abe, can you get down to the synagogue? We don't have 10 men. And he'd hurry up, shower, get over there. But otherwise, the only time that I would go, except when I was bar mitzvahed and had to go a few other Shabbat services and participate a little bit more, the only time I would go was the High Holy Days. And in the High Holy Days, the synagogue had to build an annex because it had several hundred people that would come for the High Holy Days, just like hypocritical Christians, hypocritical Jews get religious a few times a year. We have that probably in all faiths. So I remember as an unsaved, LSD-using, pot-smoking kid, thinking I knew it all, reading from the prayer book. You know, this Judaism, it's liturgy-based, so when you go in the synagogue, you recite prayers. If you're a religious Jew, you're reciting them in Hebrew. If you're more nominal like I was, you're reading them in English. And I remember reading these prayers, and they're prayers about how great God is and how wonderful God is, and he's exalted, and he's this, and he's that. I remember thinking to myself, to my shame now, but as an unsaved, drug-using kid, wow, he's really an egomaniac. In other words, why would God have all these prayers prayed to him? Why would he do that? And if it's in the Bible, you know, praise him, adore him, and he's the one that inspired that, why would he do that? What kind of egomaniac is he to do that? And of course, God in his mercy knew I was ignorant and forgave me through the blood of Jesus as I turned to him for mercy, and he didn't judge me then for my foolishness. But I remember one of my professors, a brilliant linguist, Hebrew professor that I had in college, would sometimes really get after the religious students. I was told, I don't know if it was true, but I was told he lost his family in the Holocaust, used to be religious, lost his family in the Holocaust, and lost his faith in the process. In particular, he would go after religious Jews in the class, but he knew me as a religious follower of Jesus and went after me, but not as aggressively. But he just said, look, you know, can you picture us as human beings that we want all these flies, you know, flies and bugs to gather around us? Oh, you are great. You are powerful. You are a mighty human being. You know, then there's greater distance between us and God. Why would God want us to do that? I remember hearing those kinds of arguments. But the fact is, when you encounter him in his greatness and his glory, all you can do is praise him and adore him. Over lunch, I was reading some Psalms in Hebrew, Psalm 148, Psalm 149, and urging everything in creation to heartily praise God and the ministering angels to praise God and all the earthly creation, nature and animals to praise God. And I'm looking at this and thinking, he's worthy. He's worthy. There's none like him. He's worthy of praise and adoration. We ought to stop and adore him and glorify him. And he knows it's for our good when we do. That's where we have to start. Who he is, that's where we have to start. And out of that, we give him praise and honor and glory. And out of that, we say, what is right and what is wrong in your sight? And how can I please you, God? All right, much more to come. We've got some audio clips that will jar you when you hear them. And I want to tell you about an amazing CD, Fresh Out of Israel by Mark Chapinsky, famous for the great Messianic Jewish praise band of old, Israel's Hope. This is now Mark's first solo project called Israel's Hope. 14 wonderful, powerful Messianic tracks. You can get it together with my 8-session teaching series, Stand with Israel. Together, the two resources for $25. Call to find out more, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or for details, go to askdrbrown.org. Click on the online library.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast today. Michael Brown, blessed to be a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. The kind of revolution we're talking about is a Jesus revolution. One that renounces hatred, intimidation, anger, violence. One that takes up the cross and puts down the sword. One that follows in the radical footsteps of Jesus, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love. That's the kind of revolution we need. But bear in mind, revolution means radical, dramatic, sweeping change. We need it in the church. We need it in the society. Thanks for joining us today. 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. My question for you, have we come to a point in society where we have so lost sight of the fear of God, of the consciousness of God, that the idea of moral absolutes is almost gone? And hear me, that even in the church, we preach a message that caters to people with the hope that people will accept God rather than getting people into a mindset where God will accept them. 866-34-TRUTH. I've said that once you open up the door to redefining marriage, so-called same-sex marriage, once you open up the door to that, that you have no moral argument against polygamy. How, if you say, well, marriage is just two people, well, why not three or four, especially if it's consensual and people say that we're fine with this? On what basis can you argue against adult consensual relationships between family members, especially if they're not going to produce children, and on and on? There is a series we warned you about, not thinking you're going to watch it, but just let you know what's happening in society, a polyamory series where you've got all these couples, reality TV, all these couples or threesomes, foursomes living together, raising their kids together. And this is on Showtime. We said, make no mistake about it. This is the next sexual revolution. Here's one of the stars from the reality TV show on Showtime about polyamory talking about the show.
Natalia, the director of the show, has always been a very strong poly advocate, and she really believes in the rights of poly people, and the very strong stance she took that was so pro-poly was the main reason why I felt comfortable responding to her call.
She was a feminist and was seeing poly as a feminist intervention into family,
yes.
You know, which a lot of poly spirits thought of it that way. I still do.
Yeah, she didn't talk about wanting to just capture the real life. She was like, I want to capture life in a way that really makes it clear that this is a viable way to love. And that really mattered to us.
Did you feel like the show is achieving its goal? How do you feel about the outcome of the first season, watching it yourself and watching people's reactions?
I give an unequivocal yes to that because of the deluge of messages I get from Twitter and Facebook and everywhere of people who are so grateful because they finally found the courage to come out or to realize who they are and they didn't know there were other people like that. And even to help a handful of people like that, let alone a massive number of people, is awesome. As much as there are a lot of people in the poly community fretting about what kind of message is being sent, this and that, anytime it's the real first mainstream presentation, there's going to be a problem of whatever people are on the show, that's going to be the stereotype at first. But I think it's totally worth it for the sake of getting it in people's mouths. I mean, that's the huge first step that makes it so that the people who want to do much more radical or much less mainstream stuff all of a sudden have more of an audience.
In other words, this was a show with an agenda. And now people are coming out and saying this is who we really are, and there's a poly community. But of course, how could there not be? Redefining marriage is still part of the sexual revolution that goes back to the 60s, which still had an anything-goes mentality, and hey, you can't judge. Let me say something plainly. One day, every one of us will stand before God, the judge of all the earth.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining me today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Talking about moral absolutes, talking about when you move away from certain absolute truths and say this is right, this is wrong, here are reasons for it, then you open the door to anything goes. And my contention, my thesis is we've done that for years in the church as well by somehow having the posture that we need to make God acceptable to people rather than make people acceptable to God. I do want to do away with misconceptions about God. I want to try to help someone understand his ways, but that is so that we come into conformity with him, not that he comes into conformity with us. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me further illustrate this for you with another clip from this radio interview by a practicing polyamorist. So this is a woman, maybe she is living with her husband and her boyfriend. Maybe the husband doesn't want a baby, but the boyfriend does. I mean, this is the most ridiculous imaginable stuff to me. And I, well, yes, just because you're primitive and jealous, you'd be jealous, your wife would be jealous. No, it's because we have a normal marriage. And you're saying these others don't? Uh-huh, I'm saying these others don't. If Bob and Sally, who are married, then have Ted and Jane move in, who are married, so they can have foursomes. No, that's not normal, and that's not what God intended, and that's called multiple adultery. Call it polyamory if you want. That's called multiple adultery in God's sight. Notice the word ethics or ethical in this next clip.
How popular do you think polyamory is in America, or are you under the impression, Lindsay seemed to be, that, you know, we're all polyamorous, essentially. You know, we all can have love for more than one person. Essentially, I think many people watching the show have this question. Is non-monogamy something that everyone is capable of?
I think a lot more people would try to let go of their jealousies and be able to non-monogamously build family groups. I think would do that if it was acceptable, if it was even provided for in the law. Right now, yeah, poly families have absolutely no recourse in the law. So that's one very strong determinant of whether people feel comfortable trying something is if they think there's something to catch them if it goes wrong. And they don't have that.
Would you consider polyamory a lifestyle choice or a political statement or both? Or how would you talk about that?
For me, it is the most honest way to enact what feels right to me, in addition to being the most honest way to enact what feels ethical. So
it's hard to think of love as a style.
I simultaneously believe in it as like a personal expression of what my capabilities are as a lover. Very basic way, it is an ethical choice to act on those desires and then also to be open about it.
Everybody, oh, okay. I'm feeling what you're feeling. How about a collective, God help us. Ethical, the most ethical thing. And hey, this is what the best way I can express what feels right for me. And now, but we don't have legal rights. And you're going to call love a lifestyle? Where have you heard this before, friends? That's why the queer thing happened to America. When I write about these things, I quote polyamorists who say, yeah, we're just like 20 or 30 years behind where the gay rights movement was, but gaining ground rapidly. You say, well, why are you talking on this Christian radio? I am seeking to awaken us as the church to say we have become more compromised than we realize. I mean, you agree with me or disagree? You can weigh in. Yeah, I'm kind of on my soapbox today. And first hour, I just took calls, and that's all we did for an hour. And I let listeners weigh in, and I gave my own impressions the last 2 minutes. This hour and this last half hour, I'm sharing a lot more from my heart. But I say, yeah, society is deteriorating and moral absolutes are deteriorating, but a lot of it comes back to us as believers. Not that we're supposed to just get up and scream and yell, the Bible says that if you don't believe this, you're going to hell. And the louder we do it and lose our voices, the holier we are. No, we can be reasonable. And we sit down with those who differ with us with a smile and a handshake and say, all right, let's talk. We can be civil. At the same time, we often have lost the sense of moral absolutes. Does it bother us that God will judge everyone? doesn't seem fair. A lot of things don't seem fair, and I'm not arguing that they don't seem fair. And from our perspective, they don't seem fair. And in the Bible, people raised issues to God that they don't seem fair, but ultimately recognize that God is God, and he sits in heaven and does what he pleases. You know, I think I'm going to, there's a whole other subject I want to open up tomorrow. I get into it in my book, How Saved Are We, called Were You Ever Lost? Were You Ever Lost? I think I'm going to save that for tomorrow. But many of you know, last week I wrote two articles having to do with consensual relationships between adults. One called Here Comes Incest, Just as Predicted. It's still listed on the homepage of charismanews.com/opinion. And let's see. I'm just taking a glance there. The article, since it's been posted, has been shared how many times? Over almost 2,900 times. So people recognize the importance of this subject. Here Comes Incest, Just as Predicted. I followed that up with a second article on townhall.com. Rick Santorum was right about incest in the slippery slope. And Rick Santorum said this in April 2003, in light of the Supreme Court decision Lawrence v. Texas that found a, quote, right to sodomy in the Constitution. He said, if the Supreme Court says that you have the right to consensual gay sex within your home, then you have the right to bigamy, you have the right to polygamy, you have the right to incest, you have the right to adultery, you have the right to anything. Of course, he was mocked and vilified for that. It turns out he was right. And in this second article, I included a number of quotes from gay, primarily gay readers in a website called theadvocate.com, which is a flagship gay website. A friend and colleague of mine who used to work with Focus on the Family said, here, check this out. Look at some of these comments. This is not a scientific survey, but I find it fascinating that on Town Hall, and then with some people mocking my position on the Charisma News website, a Christian website, Town Hall is a conservative website, but not necessarily Christian, I found it interesting that people were weighing in with the identical sentiments, like, well, who are you to tell two adults what they can and can't do? And who are you to say that there's a right and a wrong? And just listen to some of these posts, all right? So these are either stated gay readers or presumably gay readers or straight allies, but most likely gay readers because of the website. Alex posted this. As they can't procreate, talking about two brothers in a relationship, the main argument against incest is null. They aren't harming each other, society, or anyone in particular. So let them be. It's discouraging how many here, meaning on the gay website, have no valid arguments against them other than sick or gross. Such a situation is not my cup of tea, nor is it for many here, but being homosexual is not the norm in our society either. If we don't want people calling us gross or sick when our actions hurt neither us nor people around us, we should refrain from such name-calling ourselves. Now, I understand what Alex is saying. In other words, if you say, oh, well, two brothers or two sisters or a grown man in the dirty, yick, ick. Of course, that's how you feel. That's how I feel. Ugh, that's wrong. Well, he's saying, well, on what basis is that wrong? But for two men who are not related or two women who are not related to be together, if someone says, ugh, that's sick, that's gross, how can you say it about one and not the other? He's right. Now let me say this. Even if two men meet and fall in love and they're same-sex attracted and they want to spend the rest of their lives together, they want to have a family, I don't doubt that they can have those feelings. I don't doubt that as far as they can remember, they've had those feelings of same-sex attraction. I don't doubt that they could be very caring even as parents. And I don't doubt that it's wrong in God's sight. It's not what he designed for them. It's not what he intended for them. It's not in their best interest, nor would it ultimately be in the best interest of a child they would raise. I don't look at them as some demonic people who are out to subvert everything in our society. I look at them as hurting, broken human beings. We're all hurting, broken without Jesus. And who ultimately, by acting on their desires, are making wrong choices and therefore are sinning against God, even if their intents are loving. At the same time, I'd say, ugh, that's wrong for two men to be together, just like some gay men would say, ugh, that's wrong for two family members adult to be together. Alex is making a right point from his viewpoint and backing up mine. If you can't say one is wrong, how can you say the other is wrong? He added, I would also like to point out that my last answer wasn't based on feelings. I was arguing that if the only thing people can say against the situation is something like gross and sick, it's hypocritical from a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender perspective. Exactly. Friends, there is a slippery slope. Friends, we get away from moral absolutes. We do open the door. Fact. And it starts in the church when we seek to bring God down to our level and get away from this is right, this is wrong. Because we don't want to hurt people's feelings. Don't want to offend people. Come on, friends. We can do better than that. I know we can.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, listen to these comments that were posted on a gay website a couple years ago when a report came out about two twin brothers, porn stars that were, people that know they were twins, to people that know they were brothers. Yeah, exactly, incest. Here's another comment from Randall. Who are you to judge them when they're harming no one? See, if that's your argument of right and wrong, as opposed to, well, are there moral absolutes? Is anything right and wrong? Should the government be able to say that things are right and wrong? Should any barriers be put up about certain behaviors? Is the only question is someone being like kidnapped and abused? Bailey claimed taboos on incest aren't normal. They are indoctrinated and learned. Only reason you hold to these views is because someone brainwashed you. The only reason you hold to these views, that's what you were taught by others, but naturally you wouldn't think this way. Oh. Michael wrote, I would hope gays, being the doormat of modern knee-jerk taboos, would at least try to look at something like this from a few different angles before just throwing out condemnations. In other words, we've been wrongly judged. We can't wrongly judge others. Again, I understand the sentiments. Once you get away from moral absolutes, from the fact that we'll have to stand before God one day, and that God has things that are right and wrong, and society forgets those things to its own harm, once you get away from that, then, hey, I won't judge you if you don't judge me. Danny explained, what you feel is your business. If you don't want to so participate, then don't. But don't think your experiences must be reflected in anyone else's experience. You do not know their circumstances or their DNA. DNA is a compelling motivator above even that of an invisible, absent, and silent deity. Now, I read some of these quotes on the air last week. I'm just reading a few more of them as I have them in this article on townhall.com that came out last week. I mean, this is similar to their genes made them do it, is it not? What's in their DNA? Some scientists talk of genetic sexual attraction, GSA. Normally, GSA is something in schools, Gay Straight Association, these alliances. But GSA, genetic sexual attraction, that people, let's say a brother and sister who are raised separately, may meet later in life and find tremendous attraction because of lots of similarities that they have genetically. Oh, genes made them do it. John said, being identical twins, it is no surprise to me that they love as they do. It's the way God made them. Oh, so the genes made them do it, or God made them do it? I quote this in A Queer Thing Happened to America. It was actually Rush Limbaugh who noted that students were commenting on the Columbia University student newspaper website after one of their professors was arrested for having a 3-year consensual affair with his adult daughter. They're mystified as to why it's illegal. Wait, one of them said, why is consensual incest a crime? It might not be appealing to everyone, but if they're adults and they consent, who cares what they do? Rush Limbaugh said, this is a typical comment from a student on the site. Of course, people are going to think that way. Of course, people are going to have that perspective when we get away from moral absolutes. I want to challenge you. Especially those of you who are faithful listeners to the broadcast, I want to challenge you to ask yourself if it troubles you that God one day will judge the whole world. Oh, look, I know we all want justice. And I know we're thinking, oh, the poor and the suffering and the exploited and the tortured and the kidnapped and the victims of cruelty. We want justice, yes. But do we want everyone to be judged? Do we trust that with a resurrection to life and a resurrection to damnation, that God will be utterly fair? Will we on that day before God be able and willing to say, amen, your ways are just, your ways are true, your ways are righteous? Pastors, preachers, teachers, Bible study leaders, ask yourself if you unconsciously, subtly, subconsciously try to present a picture of grace or God's goodness or God's love to make him more palatable to people who have lost sight of divine absolutes. Now, let me say this very quickly. And my dear friend, Dr. James White, if you're listening, you'll smile over this. I believe that one reason that many people have shifted to Calvinism in recent years is because there is somewhat of a corrective. I'm not a Calvinist myself, but Calvinism will unapologetically say God is sovereign and he does what he pleases and he doesn't have to apologize to anyone or answer to anyone. And therefore, Calvinists would have less of a problem with the idea of God decreeing this or that than, say, a non-Calvinist might. And when the body gets so man-centered and tries to bring God down to our level, there's a swing. I believe it's a swing a little too far over to Calvinism, but a right swing in many ways to say God is king and God rules and reigns and he sits on the throne and does what pleases him. And we do best to bow down before his throne and honor and worship him. All right, every one of you, this is the season of the Jewish High Holy Days, a great time to be praying for the salvation of Jewish people worldwide. And I want to put into your hand a CD that will help you connect to your Jewish roots and a wonderful tool for Messianic Jewish praise and worship. Let's listen to a clip, and then I'll tell you what this is all about.
Exalting his holy ones, executing vengeance on the nations. Saints be joyful in glory, let us praise his name with the dance. Israel rejoice in your neighbor.
Come on, does that do something for you or what? I'm holding this CD in my hand with a big smile. My dear friend and colleague, Mark Chapinsky's lived in Israel with his family for many years now. He was one-third of the world-famous worship team, Messianic Jewish praise and worship team, Israel's Hope, led by Paul Wilbur, Mark Chapinsky, Renee Block. They're all friends of mine. We were part of the same congregation in Maryland in the late 80s together, early 90s. And Mark finally, after all these years, has put out his first solo CD. He's written all the songs, a couple of these golden oldies like the one we just played. The CD is called Israel's Hope, Messianic Praise and Worship, 14 wonderful songs. Some will get you up dancing and shouting. Some will get you on your face worshiping. All written by Mark and performed by Mark. To get the CD, we put together a special package that will bless you and inform you, and we've reduced the price by $10 or $15, including postage. $25 postage paid. Not only will you get Mark's brand new CD, Israel's Hope, we may be the first ones announcing it like this in the States, but you'll also get my 8-session teaching CD. This is for your computer MP3 player, that CD, called Stand With Israel, including a classic debate with Rabbi Tovia Singer, a well-known counter-missionary rabbi who's refused to debate me ever since that. That's 20 years back. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. The CD to listen to in your car, your computer, MP3 player, and then my CD with MP3 for your computer or MP3 player only. 1-800-278-9978, or go online, ask DrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore for today's special offer. My bottom line today, God is God without apology. He rules, he reigns, he is the king. Let us not try to make him acceptable to us. Let us be acceptable to him.